On June 19, the High Court of Australia handed down one of its most important judgments for 2014. In the case known as Williams No. 2, Ron Williams, a father of four children who attend state schools in Toowoomba, Queensland, challenged the constitutionality of the National Schools Chaplaincy Program. Since 2007, the Commonwealth Government has paid money directly to organisations like the Scripture Union of Queensland to provide chaplains in Australian schools. Ron Williams objects to this policy because he believes in a separation of church and state, and that government schools should provide a secular education. But the cases Ron Williams has run in the High Court have ended up being decided on different grounds. What appears to be emerging within the High Court is a new emphasis on the importance of federalism when it comes to Commonwealth spending in policy areas traditionally regarded as state government responsibilities. Hello, I'm Sean Brennan, and welcome to another podcast from the Gilbert and Tobin Centre of Public Law. Today, I'm talking to Andrew Lynch, a professor in constitutional law at the University of New South Wales. Hi, Andrew, and thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hi, Sean.
Can you start by telling us briefly, what was the result of this most recent challenge to the National Schools Chaplaincy Program?
The result was a win for Mr. Williams, with the High Court unanimously striking down the chaplaincy program.
So we'll come back to Williams number two, but let's look at the wider context first. This was a case about what the Commonwealth Government can fund directly to achieve its political objectives and its national policy goals. Having a federal system is meant to limit the power of the central government by dividing authority for governing the nation between Canberra and the states. But for a long time, the Commonwealth seems to have had a free hand to fund policies and programs across a very wide spectrum of policy areas, including many that we might have traditionally seen as state responsibilities. Why was that?
I think the answer to that really was that challenges to those schemes were few and far between, and on the occasions where the court considered the question as to how the Commonwealth could spend its money, members of the court rarely found there was enough common ground between them so that we had a clear picture. So essentially, Commonwealth had a free hand because the situation was uncertain.
Well, it appears things have started to change. We've had individual citizens like Ron Williams challenging Commonwealth funding programs in the High Court, and they've been having some success. So let's look at what's been going on. We start with the case where the late Brian Pape challenged the Commonwealth in 2009. What happened there?
Well, the Pape case is a great example of what I was talking about in terms of the court having very limited opportunities to consider this question. Brian Pape is probably unique amongst the Australian citizenry for deciding to challenge the Rudd government's decision to mail out money in the form of cheques described as a tax bonus, which had the purpose of stimulating the economy during the global financial crisis. Now, of course, many people are very happy to receive that money, but Pape questioned the constitutional capacity of the Commonwealth to make these payments. What the Pape case established for the first time, and from across all members of the court, was that simply when the Commonwealth appropriates money from consolidated revenue, that does not also carry with it the power for that money to be spent. And in fact, the Commonwealth's ability to contract with others and to make financial payments must be sourced from elsewhere in the Constitution or statutes made under it.
So the Pape case made it clear that the Commonwealth couldn't be complacent about its legal authority to spend public money. The legislation appropriating the money, that is, withdrawing it from the Treasury, wasn't enough, and they had to look elsewhere for a power in the Constitution to authorise its spending. So that's when Ron Williams comes into the picture. He didn't like the Commonwealth funding school chaplains in state schools, and in 2012 the High Court considered his first attempt to knock over the National Schools Chaplaincy Program. What happened in the case that we now know as Williams No. 1?
Well, in Williams No. 1, Ron Williams actually had a win, as you outlined in your introduction. The initial basis, I think, on which he hoped to make his arguments concerned freedom of religion under Section 116 of the Constitution. But really, once the case started being heard, it was clear that all the focus was upon the capacity of the Commonwealth Executive to spend money on the chaplain's scheme. Now, unlike in the Pape case, where there had been legislation supporting the tax bonus payment, and a majority of four judges had found that law to be connected to the Commonwealth's legislative powers, in Williams No. 1, the chaplaincy scheme had no legislative basis whatsoever. So the question was really about whether the payment could be sustained under the Commonwealth's executive power. And that involved the court in looking at the functions of the executive, looking at established categories through which money could be spent, and arriving at the conclusion, 6-1, that the chaplaincy scheme was outside of that power.
So after Pape and then Williams No. 1, things are starting to look a bit more complicated for the Commonwealth in terms of legal backing for many of the programs it wants to run and spend money on. The Gillard government, which inherited the school chaplains program from the Howard government that initiated, has the problem of responding to Williams No. 1. How did it react to the High Court's decision in that case?
Well, it responded in perhaps a fairly predictable way, in that what the court had said in Williams No. 1 was that expenditure required, if it didn't fit with any of the established categories of executive power, then statutory authorisation was going to be needed. So what the government turned around and did was to try and provide that statutory authorisation through the effect of what was described as a rescue or emergency legislation, which was hurriedly brought before the Commonwealth Parliament and enacted. What that legislation did was to provide that the Commonwealth had the power to spend money on not just the chaplaincy programs, but a variety of programs, numbering over 400, that were made under regulations attached to that legislation. So it also conferred upon the government, it was a statute conferring upon the government, the ability to add new programs to that scheme. So it was trying, I suppose, to maintain the status quo, but with a veneer of statutory authorisation.
So we've got this emergency package of legislation and regulations from the Commonwealth. They're trying to give legal authority to Commonwealth spending, not just, as you say, for school chaplains, but hundreds of other programs, and effectively on a one-size-fits-all basis. But Ron Williams hasn't given up. He again goes to the High Court to challenge the chaplaincy program, this time by questioning this rescue legislation, the emergency package. The Commonwealth tries once more to defend its spending programs in the High Court, and on the 26th of June, the court delivers the result. So you've told us that Ron Williams was successful for the second time in knocking over the chaplaincy program. What did the Commonwealth say to defend its legislation, and why did they lose?
Well, the Commonwealth made a range of arguments, some of which were dealt with, were given fairly short shrift by the court, that they were probably more of a secondary nature. That the Commonwealth's main argument was to try to connect the reference to the chaplaincy program in the regulations and the ability of the government to list it there to a source of legislative power in the Constitution. And the main one of those which was discussed was that found in section 5123A. The A signifies that it was added at one of Australia's few successful referendums, which is often referred to as the welfare or social security power. It is actually quite a lengthy power. Most of the powers in section 51 are fairly succinct. And it mentions a range of different payments, such as maternity allowances or sickness benefits or health services. The aspect of section 5123A, which was pivotal really for the Williams case though, was that which refers to benefits to students.
And the High Court's response to those arguments based on benefits to students from the chaplaincy program?
They unanimously, there are only 6 judges sitting in the case, found that the scheme, certainly in its current form, could not be found to come within the constitutional descriptor of benefits to students. There are 2 reasons for that. One, that they interpreted those words, and this was by reference to earlier case authority, as requiring sort of an individual focus, in that the benefits shouldn't be simply to a school community at large, as the chaplain scheme actually said that was how it would operate, but should be at least calculated, if not indeed transferred to persons as individuals. The second feature was a definition of benefits from the earlier authorities, which focused upon meeting the human wants of persons who were in the specified situations of Section 5123A. In this instance, the human wants that arise by consequence of actually being a student. And after looking at the description of the chaplaincy program, the court didn't see that connection to be very clear.
Okay, so were you surprised with the decision in Williams number 2? And more generally, what do you think we're watching here going on inside the High Court and its attitude to Commonwealth spending power?
I think there was probably very little surprise across the court's observers. The rescue legislation was widely perceived to have constitutional problems. But in the end, the court really narrowed its focus. It didn't rule on the validity of that act as a whole, and nor did it, as a result, rule on the validity of the many other programs which are found in the regulations. So the focus of the case then is really on the extent to which Section 5123A might support the chaplaincy program. Whether that was a surprise or not, the issue had been discussed by three of the judges in the first Williams case. Two of those three, who are the two who are still sitting on the court, had made it clear that they thought the chaplaincy program would not find validity under that power. So the writing was already on the wall that benefits to students might not be the constitutional hook upon which the chaplaincy scheme could hang.
Okay, so finally, where to from here? Is this the end of the road for the Commonwealth's National School Chaplaincy Program? And more broadly, how vulnerable is Commonwealth funding for those hundreds of other programs as well?
Well, so far as the chaplaincy program is concerned, the Commonwealth seems fairly determined to try and keep this program at all costs. I mean, it's now defended it twice before the High Court, and the language we've seen from the government since Williams number 2 came down really suggests that if they can find a way to keep it going, then that's what will happen. Its options are sort of twofold. It can go down the path of simply providing the funds to the states under Section 96 of the Constitution and requiring them to maintain the National School Chaplaincy Program, subject to whatever conditions the Commonwealth attaches to that money. The Commonwealth seems reluctant to do this. It could have done that after the first Williams case. I think it feels a lot of ownership over the National School Chaplaincy Program. It doesn't want that to be something that it shares with or becomes administratively complicated in delivering via the states. The second option is to look more closely at its legislative powers. Although in Williams number 2, there are suggestions, particularly from Justice Crennan, who wrote alone, that the fundamental objectives of the scheme and the provision of welfare or counselling services to students isn't completely foreclosed by the meaning of benefits to students in Section 5123A. Developing the scheme so as, or tailoring it so as to address the limitations upon that power which are identified by the joint judgment in the case, I think would render it quite a different scheme. There are other options, perhaps the use of the corporation's power in Section 5120, but that also throws up questions about the status of bodies like Scripture Union Queensland and other chaplaincy service providers in terms of are they constitutional corporations. And also there's the danger there that the court might take a narrow approach to that power by addressing some unresolved issues from earlier litigation, which the Commonwealth doesn't want to risk. I mean, the corporation's power is a very useful power in terms of sustaining a raft of Commonwealth legislation. The use of the executive power by itself, there were arguments made by the Commonwealth in that regard. In many ways, they repeated arguments from earlier cases, Williams number 1 and also earlier again. But I think those options are now completely foreclosed.
Andrew Lynch, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
It's a pleasure, Sean. Thank you.